Welcome to the Trust Your Gut podcast with Erica Smith and Nicole Carter. In this show, we'll be sharing with you everything we've learned about gut health and everything that you can do to make it better. We'll be sharing our stories from personal experiences, client success stories, as well as the new and relevant science to gut health. We hope you enjoy the show.
Well, I'll admit that I'm a little foggy today because I actually didn't sleep great last night. And man, what a difference it makes when you don't sleep.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Right? That's what we're talking about today. Yeah. Sleep.
Yeah, for sure. I have, you know, it's funny because I did have like terrible insomnia until I kind of got myself straightened out. But as you know, like when you have kids, there's always the extraneous factors, you know. My daughter wakes up during the night and has nightmares. And so that was a trick for me last night. But anyway, we're back. And thank you guys for tuning in and listening again. We are today talking about sleep and how to improve sleep and the connection between sleep and gut health.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really cool stuff. And I think we like to talk about this and we usually come back to it at some point in every discussion, how the gut and the brain work together because of the gut-brain axis. And I think that's probably a lot to do with why people have, we have so much sleep issues in our at least in the US. I know that there's some pretty significant numbers on insomnia sufferers and people that use medications for it.
The number in the US is 70 million. With at least one sleep disorder, which is crazy.
Insane.
And they think that they are only diagnosing about 80% of them, or 80% of them aren't being diagnosed. So that number is like huge.
Right. Because most people just go, oh, I just can't sleep. I'm not going to try to get help for it. I just can't sleep, period.
Yep. And then, you know, comorbidities will aggravate treatments of it, which is, you know, they think that doctors should be working together in order to address it, but we know that that's not really a strong suit for our current medical model. So, you know, it's a tough issue. I spoke about it on a short little live I did and how about sleep apnea in particular, but you know, how it's so important. And yet we kind of put it in the back burner because I mean, your bed, your bedroom, that's like a safety place. You don't want anything going in there. And it's a little taboo-ish to say, you know, you can't sleep well. And everybody just says it's hormones or it's kids or it's this or it's that. We don't ever want to address it because, you know, this sort of disease in our medical model doesn't have the magic pill. It has, it's really like a combined effort of systems that are affecting your sleep. And the quote unquote solution for the medical industry is a CPAP machine. Nobody wants to put a CPAP machine on their face.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I love this topic and I'm so glad we're covering it today because like you said, it's so prevalent. I know that, so Eric and I have kind of picked a couple areas that we want to dig into with regards to why sleep is important, things that affect sleep. And then we're going to talk about what each of us do to improve our sleep and, you know, other things like food and also some herbal supplements that I think are really worthwhile looking at. And so that's our show for you today. So did you want to start, Erica, with, you know, I know you've done a lot of research on sleep and how it affects the health.
Yeah. So I think that we can just start by maybe pointing out a few reasons why sleep is important. And I just picked three of them that I think are pretty general. But again, sleep encompasses a lot of things and it affects all systems when we don't sleep properly. So one of them is maintaining normal BMI. And the reason is because if we don't sleep well, we cannot maintain our insulin sensitivity. It messes with our hormones, especially, you know, your leptin and your ghrelin, which are your satiety and your, you know, hunger hormones. So while insulin also tells you to store and tells your brain to stop eating, when your insulin and leptin are imbalanced, then they can't counterbalance that ghrelin. And so you always feel hungry with it. But I also don't want people to be fooled because only 60% of those who suffer from the sleep apnea or sleep issues are overweight. So that leaves a whole lot of people out there that are not overweight, you know, suffering from this. And I address that as well, or within that number one, I think that proper sleep prevents you from suffering from heart disease. And in 2020, 690,882 Americans died from heart disease. Yeah. I mean, that is a huge number.
Yeah, I think the still number one killer is heart disease.
Yeah, they had predicted that cancer was going to take over, but that still hasn't been the case. 17.9 million people, or 32% of the deaths worldwide, were from cardiovascular disease. So it's not just an America issue. It really is a worldwide issue. So I would say that if that's one of the, I mean, if that's the number one reason causing deaths in America, I would see that's a good reason to get your sleep under control for sure. Mm-hmm. Number two, it helps with concentration and productivity. Obviously, moms know this. If we cannot sleep, we cannot be productive. And it also affects your athletic or exercise performance, right? So if you're tired, you're not going to go out for a walk, you're not going to go lift weights and all that stuff, which affects, again, your weight gain and all of that. But because we are biological systems, you know, just one mechanism of action will typically serve multiple functions. In this case, you know, sleep is shown to be critical for that cognition, consolidation of memories, and emotional regulation. So if we don't have proper non-REM and REM patterns, then it directly impacts, you know, our circadian rhythms, and it can, you know, affect our depression and other issues that affect sleep. So proper sleep, again, will affect all of that cognitive and personal behavior, emotional stuff. Mm-hmm. And then number three is it helps us maintain a healthy immune response and lowers inflammation. Now, for me, it's hard to separate those two, because I almost like to say that good sleep gives you the best gut microbiome that snoozing can buy.
Right? Absolutely.
70% of our immune system lies in the microbiome. So to maintain every bit of that biome will benefit your immune response. But we also know that inflammation will not only trigger the alteration of that immune response, but it also affects the lining of our gut. So that correlation and to leaky gut and gut dysbiosis is super important to address.
Mm-hmm. You know, you bring up a good point here, because I was doing some research lately on, not on sleep, but on the mucosal lining of the gut. And what we do know is that when the mucosal lining becomes reduced or thinner, then we become more at risk for inflammatory bowel conditions and things like that. And what causes that thinning of the mucosal layer is the disruption of the microbiome and stress. And so I think like stress and sleep are like antagonizing each other, right? Like when we don't get enough sleep, our stress hormones go up and all of that. So it's interesting that like the compounding effect that it has on the gut. And I don't think people realize, you know, they just realize they're tired, they don't function as well. But I don't think they recognize the impact it actually has on your gut, which, if we are always talking about the gut is the center of your health, and if your digestive system is not functioning right, then you're going to have a lot of other problems.
Right. And there is, you know, we have a way to track it. We have a way to measure it. You know, Akkermansia is one of those bacteria that will help thicken that lining and that mucosal layer. So directly affected, you know, by what we put in our mouths and what we eat. And unfortunately, that sleep and stress will also, it's like a Ferris wheel, right? One goes and the other one goes as well, and it drives it. So what about you? What do you think about the major things that affect that sleep?
Well, I know I'm going to tell you what I've experienced as well, because I really did have a big run-in with this in the last couple of years. But I think there's a lot of things that factor in, but three buckets that I'm going to call stress hormones, sex hormones, and blood sugar. So we kind of touched on this a second ago, but first of all, your stress hormones. So if, for example, your stress hormones are high at night, a lot of times people will have trouble falling asleep, and or they will wake up during the night and have that sleep latency and not be able to go back to sleep. So both of those can be caused by high cortisol, or high adrenaline. And what causes those can be a number of things, right? The stress hormones can go up from, for me, it was not eating enough carbohydrates. When I was doing a very, very low carb diet, I was having a lot of insomnia. And as soon as I started eating fruit, insomnia went away, like that day.
Fantastic.
So I feel like that significantly impacted my stress hormones. And I talked about before how, you know, when you don't get enough glucose, your stress hormones do go up, which is the downside of any low carb diet. But right. That was definitely like so profound in my experience that it changed everything for me, because I was like, oh, well, I have to sleep. And I would go 2 days and occasionally 3 days without really sleeping. And I was such a mess. I felt terrible. But ultimately, yeah, your stress hormones will hugely affect your sleep. And that's a whole nother bucket of how do we deal with those, but also your sex hormones. So we know that estrogen dominance is a contributor to insomnia. And most people are estrogen dominant. The reason is because a lot has to do with our gut. If our gut isn't functioning right, especially our whole system, like our liver, then we're not able to detoxify the used estrogen from our body the way that we should. And also we're constantly bombarded with xenoestrogens, which mimic estrogen in your body. And so we do have that estrogen dominant, even if we're for women who are postmenopausal. In fact, they get it the worst. I'll never forget this time. I worked at Whole Foods when it was called Wild Oats. So we're talking like 20 some years ago. And it was like a pharmacy. People would come into the natural supplements area and ask for something, you know, I have issue XYZ, and you find them a supplement. So pretty fun doing that. But one lady, I would never forget, she came in and she said, show me where your sleep supplements are. And she goes, I'm going through menopause. I literally need a sledgehammer. And I kind of was experiencing that myself. And I really thought it was my hormones, but once I got the stress hormones under control, it was way better. But a lot of women will experience this in the luteal phase of their cycle when they naturally become estrogen dominant. And men may experience this too. So you can check by checking your, you know, blood test or whatever. But yeah, sex hormones are a big one. So not just estrogen dominance, but also low progesterone. So sometimes this is noted by an early morning wake up. So women that wake up at 2-3 in the morning and can't go back to sleep, especially, you know, for women in the luteal phase after age 40, their you know, progesterone tends to go down. And also I want to say that if you're under a lot of stress, the cortisol will actually steal from your progesterone. You won't make as much progesterone. So there's a lot of problems there with the hormone balance, but it can definitely wreak havoc on your body when the estrogen is high.
I'm going to interrupt you just for a second, yeah, because I think I've learned a lot from you on this whole estrogen thing. I don't think that enough women know about all of this. And I would love for us to add an episode specifically, yeah, on this. But, you know, I have a couple of books that I am still in the study mode on, because there is so much to learn here and so many ways to make it so much better for us during that perimenopause, mm-hmm, and that menopause stage. So sorry about, yeah, that. Okay. Number three.
No, good point. Because I think we do need to talk about that more, because I don't find very many people, you know, women over 40 talking about how estrogen is affecting all these things. Yeah. So highly overlooked. We'll add that to the list. And then the third one is blood sugar. So this is tying into what I talked about earlier. So some people will wake up during the night because their blood sugar has dropped. So right. I actually monitored my blood sugar with a CGM, and I was waking up during the night. And when I checked the next day, the times that I woke up coordinated with my lowest drops in blood sugar. And what would happen right after my blood sugar dropped to its lowest? A big spike. And so during the night, my blood sugar, I was becoming hypoglycemic during the night. Mm. And then even though I ate nothing in my sleep, my body said, okay, you need glucose. We're going to go to the liver. We're going to break down some tissue, give you some glucose. That's gluconeogenesis. And then boom, the blood sugar goes back up. So there's a lot of people that do the low carb diets and wondering, why they're having glucose spikes overnight. It's because you get hypoglycemic and you might feel shaky upon waking during the night, which is what would happen to me. Once or twice during the night, maybe one in the morning or something like that, a few hours after going to bed, I would have that. And I never knew what it was until I did the CGM. So I thought that was pretty interesting to watch. But definitely if you're having blood sugar regulation issues, then, we'll talk about that, what we do, but that's regarding, you know, if your body is not able to maintain your glucose overnight, then you might need to have a bedtime snack.
I agree.
To help you get through the sleep. And I know that for me, that made a huge difference. I'll tell you my potato story later.
So what are the, I think from here, you know, given that everybody now gets a little bit of a grasp as you know, why sleep is important and, you know, things that are majorly affecting it, it'd be good to talk about maybe three things that we each do because we think are good for it. And on my behalf, things that I do because I found them to be beneficial for a good night's sleep would be exercising. And I know that we've talked about this. And again, I qualify exercising as a set time to do a specific activity, you know, every day. And that typically that activity for me is walking. So I generally walk and I walk while fasted in the mornings. And I do that at least six out of the 7 days of the week. So
nice.
The other thing I do is I avoid bright lights close to or after sunset. Mm-hmm. I use blue light blockers. I don't do phones, TVs, computers, or iPads in the bedroom. Instead, I read with a dim light until my eyes just can't read anymore because they are done.
I do that too. I love that.
Now, we just talked about all of the insulin stuff and food, but I do try to maintain a window of between 3 to 4 hours of no food. Mm-hmm. Now, I do a chamomile and cinnamon tea about 1 to 2 hours before bedtime. And it's more of a kind of a routine that this is, it's mentally preparing me for sleep. I don't know that the chamomile does that much, but again, it's
I think it does.
I'm sure it does, but the placebo effect and the routine and the telling my every senses in my body that I'm going to sleep definitely does more for me. Or I, you know, the combination of those two. If I'm on my week, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I do sometimes will eat a bowl of like coconut whipped cream with blueberries and pecans. And it's a small bowl, but you know, it just kind of hits the right spot. And I do that with my tea and or some raw honey.
Sounds really good.
Just because it feels good. And as a bonus, I will say that if and when I'm stressed, I write down what's stressing me out. And I'll do either breathing techniques or a two minute sleep meditation before entering the bedroom. Because, you know, Headspace on Netflix, I don't know who's ever watched that. They're great. And even if you've done them before, you kind of forget. And if you're really stressed and you find one of those before you go in the bedroom to do that, they're really kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that those are great. I know that there's an app also called Calm and it has like kind of relaxing music and there's meditations and I like that one too, but I think anything that kind of pulls you down into that relaxed zone, you know, we've become so high strung and going all day, especially, I know you're just like me with juggling work and kids and everything. It's, you're kind of go, go, go all day long. And it's hard to shift gears into that lower gear and slow down. But
yeah,
you kind of have to do it. It doesn't really work very well when you go from fifth gear to try to get into bed and go to sleep.
100%.
Some people can do that, but
I don't know how.
I've never been one of them. No.
What about you? What top things do you do to?
So I'm with you on several of yours, especially the light. That one is, and actually for me, and I'm going to switch it a little bit, but I avoid more so like the social media. I don't watch the news and television anyway. I think it's highly toxic to your brain, but even social media, because even a lot of those things on there, which I know you and I have some alignment on our political views, but what I see on there is often very triggering to me. And so what I try to avoid are anything that's like a stressful trigger. And unfortunately, a lot of that comes from being online and, you know, but I'll also say like reading stressful books for me, if it's something that incites stress in me or fear or worry, I just don't do it. And it's especially not during the nighttime. So I think it's avoiding stressful stimuli is probably one of my things. The second thing I do is I make sure that I get carbohydrates during the day. And especially if it's halfway through my cycle or like the lute becoming towards the luteal phase, I notice that your blood sugar is a little bit more volatile and you probably need a little bit more, at least on certain days. So for me, my potato trick, which I talked about a while ago, I was one of those people that was afraid to eat too many carbs and especially a starchy white potato, right? But I, one of these periods of time where I was having really bad insomnia, I cooked a potato and I ate a cold potato in the evening before bed. And I actually, it just sounded good, right? I just craved it. Weird. And I ate that and I slept like a rock that night. And I woke up the next day and I was like, what just happened? I hadn't slept like that in a really long time. So, and I think that goes back to getting enough carbohydrates so that the glucose level or so that your cortisol levels come down. So because on really low carb diets, it does go up. Your body doesn't like to have to dip into your lean tissue to make glucose. So that process can happen to save you, but it shouldn't all the time because then your stress hormones are up. So that potato essentially kept my blood sugar up enough during the night that the stress hormones stayed down and I didn't go into that hypoglycemic effect. But it was miraculous. It was like a one night cure. So that was, so if I need to around my cycle, I will have a little bit of carbs before bed, not necessarily a potato, but maybe, you know, for dinner. And if I'm hungry, I will have something else before I go to bed. But normally I have like you a good couple of hours so I can digest my food and not feel full when I go to sleep. And then the third thing is I've been using plant medicine for like 25 years and I swear by it. It's been so helpful for me. I used it for my kids. I used it when I gave birth to my kids. I've used it for every ailment that has come across my path my entire life. So
witchery.
What's that?
Witchery.
Witchery.
100%. What is this witchery you speak of?
So I love it. And one of the things, there's a lot, and you mentioned the chamomile. So chamomile, it is a nervine. It actually calms the nervous system, but it's also good for estrogen dominance. So it actually helps to lower your estrogen levels, which might be part of how it's working.
It's non-caffeinated.
Non-caffeinated. Yeah. So most of the herbs, well, there are herbs that have caffeine, but for sleep, there's so many great herbs and you can drink them in a tea form like Erica, or I happen to like the capsules of valerian. And valerian is good for people that are overthinkers. So I tend to be that person that I go to bed at night and I lay there and my mind just kind of circles and circles around all the things that I'm concerned with or need to do the next day or didn't get done that day. It's hard to shut the monkey mind off. And the valerian is really good at doing that. It's also not habit forming. There's a couple other herbs that work really well, but I'm going to say my little herbal or supplement repertoire would be that. I use CBD oil sometimes, although I've recently read that CBD is estrogenic. So I am kind of now going back to research that and see if that's something to be concerned with. And then of course, magnesium is always a great calming mineral, which I'm careful about supplementing things and taking vitamins and pills and things because you can really mess up your minerals in your body. But magnesium is one that most people are really low in, and it's actually really supportive of gut health, just taking magnesium, because we tend to lose it when we're under stress, which we all are under stress, right?
Right. And I think that, you know, with the magnesium and getting your minerals wrong, you know, for a person like you that does organ meat, that's probably likely a possibility. Most humans on this planet aren't doing that stuff. So it's hard to overdose for the normal person on something like magnesium.
For sure.
I love all that you said, and you know, the books, before bed right now, I actually have a study book that I'm reading, although I want to transition into something that's more relaxing, a nonfiction or a fiction book that I don't have to think too much about, but it's hard with everything else going on. You know,
I
committed to reading all this stuff. So like just those 5 minutes, you know, they help me, and then I can just go in the next day and do the, you know, lineups of everything. But yeah, I agree. A fiction book is great to do.
Yeah, dreamland.
Dreamland for sure. And then the food thing is, you know, it's always interesting to see where you lie on in terms of what do you do before bed. So I think trial and error for most people.
For sure. And I think too, when we talk about there's always that gut health component. So we can't really leave this topic without mentioning what do you do as far as, do you have a food or foods that you would consider the best for gut health that would therefore improve sleep?
Absolutely. So I think good fats like avocado oil, and you and I might differ on this because of, you know, your PUFAs, but, you know, avocado oil for sure, MCT oil, and certain nuts, specifically pistachios are super high in melatonin, which as we know is a key hormone in controlling those sleep cycles. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say good fats is because fats will provide that consistent energy source throughout your sleep, hopefully preventing you from waking up in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
Protein, I think, is super important. Caveat on this, again, making sure it's not too close to dinner. And if you require enzymes for proper usage of that protein, definitely make sure that you're doing that. But it is necessary to have protein for the muscle repair and all the immune functions that happen during sleep. I mean, that is why we go to sleep a lot of times. So we need to make sure we have enough of that. And again, carbs at dinner. For me, specifically, I try to do them resistant starches. So I know that Nicole said when she did that potato, that potato is cold. So guess what? It is now more of a resistant starch. It's still higher in lectins because everybody knows that I am a lectin freak. But then say a sweet potato. But yes, as long as it's cooled, then, you know, it's a resistant starch. So white rice, which I typically cook and it's already in my fridge. And again, if you suffer from histamine issues, you know, you want to keep those leftovers at a minimum, or you're not able to do that. So we have to find a different way to do a resistant starch, and probably a sweet potato would be good for a person that has histamine issues. But carbs at dinner for sure.
Yeah. 100% on board with you on that. The carbs made a huge difference for me. I have noticed that I can, as long as I get the carbs during the day, I do okay. But I do think that there's a stronger effect when you have it a couple hours before bed. I think it's that blood sugar balancing effect definitely helps. And for gut health, you know, I'm going to go back to my, my go-to is always the gelatin. And gelatin, the glycine content in gelatin, it actually has kind of a tranquilizing effect. So people sometimes use glycine by itself, like dissolved in water,
right,
to help them go to sleep. Yeah. And I actually haven't done that, but I do think, you know, I do get a lot of glycine in through gelatin. So I'll do like a smoothie. Sometimes I'll make Jell-O. And my favorite one is the soups. So soups made with a lot of gelatin in them. So some people can do like a bone broth with, if you make it with bones that have a lot of connective tissue, like the knuckle bones and all of that. My favorite is the oxtail, because oxtail is really, really high in that gelatin. In fact, it's so interesting. The last time I made that soup, I make this oxtail and mushroom soup. Mm-hmm. And it's solid when I put it in the refrigerator and bring it
out.
It's completely solid, but it doesn't have any fat on it. I mean, very little. So it just shows you how much collagen is in those oxtails. So that's my favorite, and definitely see an improvement in gut health. And for my clients that have super bad gut health, you know, we're talking about like Crohn's and colitis, they see huge improvements within a few days of taking in the gelatin. So anything that helps to improve the gut health is going to affect your gut brain axis, which is going to help you with the brain function that, you know, may cause, I'm going to say, mental health issues, because people Absolutely. Don't like that word, but it's really what it is anxiety, depression, and things that are going to make you stay awake at night.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, well, this was great. I learned a couple things, and I always like hearing you talk about hormones. And like I said, we definitely need to go back to that one. But I hope that everybody gets a couple ideas on what they can eat and what they can do to better their sleep after this.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. Send in your comments and questions. We love to hear the feedback. And we'll be back again next week with another podcast. And I think our next topic is going to be on processed foods and what you need to know about that.
All right.
All right, everyone. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us.
Goodbye.